south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Wow, can't believe it. This is show number 661. That means if you loaded all the shows together since day one, put them in your iPhone, iPod, or MP3 player, and listen to them continuously, you'd probably get a brain tumor. I mean, hey, that's over 300 continuous hours of my bloviations. Now, once in a great while, I get an email from someone saying, John, you're repeating yourself. Hey, you get what you pay for, right? Well, I don't know if anybody could talk for 300 hours and not repeat themselves a little bit, but that's no excuse. If I'm repeating myself, at least I know I'm updating it for the moment because, you know, what happened 3, 4, 5, or 6 years ago here in Latin America can't remain static. Things are ever-changing, especially in the arena of getting your permanent and temporary residency in whatever Latin country. Oh, and yeah, I got a flurry of emails just recently since I've been laying out the news about Ecuador and how I've kind of taken it off my list. Well, it turns out the emails I'm getting from people who live in Ecuador, most are pissed off to infuriated as to what's been happening there, to the tune of about 5-1. That's 5 awfully pissed off to 1. Whose author says it's still a pretty good idea to move to Ecuador. And not to add insult to injury here, but I will. Just got this link from an expat living in Ecuador. He says, forget it. If you have to travel to Ecuador back and forth for whatever reason, he says, pick any other Latin country but Ecuador. Unless you have a lot of money and don't really care what it costs. Then he sends this article entitled, Air Travel Declines in Ecuador, which is exactly the opposite of what's happening in almost every other Latin country. Except Venezuela. And you know, it's a good time to mention air travel here in Latin America because I get that question all the time. What's it cost? How long does it take? What are the layovers like? As for Central America, you can get flights, I looked them up just yesterday, anywhere from $400 round trip to a major hub in the United States to maybe $700 or $800, averaging around $550 to $600, and changing all the time. Of course, the real cheap ones, the $400 round trip jobs, you'll always have a layover somewhere and could take you the better part of a half a day to get it worked out. But you know, it all depends on what your time's worth to you. If you're flying from a big USA hub to a big Latin America hub, you can get a nonstop direct flight. It's going to cost you more, usually at least $600. And I guess for some people, it's worth the extra $200 to skip hanging around for a few hours in an airport. Now, as far as airfare for people on a tight budget who are thinking about having their plan B in South America, you know, it's inevitable that you'll be making a few trips back and forth, at least at the beginning. And every flight's going to cost you at least twice what it will cost you for a round trip to Central America. Plus, it'll almost always take you a whole day to complete that trip. Often, you'll have to get a hotel in a layover city, meaning you'll have to add a couple of extra travel days onto each trip. And for example, if you're taking a nonstop flight from a big hub, let's say O'Hare Field in Chicago to Buenos Aires, a one-shot deal like that, unless there's a promotion, it'll run you $1,500 easy, almost more than it would cost you on a round trip to Europe. So unless you're moving to South America permanently, that is, you're not going to go tripping around, it'll cost you a big chunk of dough every time you want to fly back to the first world. But let me paraphrase this article about flying to Ecuador. And this is very recent, May 13th. It starts out, Ecuadorian businesses that depend on air travel say they cannot compete with other South American countries due to high taxes and airport user fees that are driving up the prices of tickets dramatically. It says, airport officials and the tourist industry in Ecuador say they are being crippled by taxes and fees that amount to up to a half of the price of the tickets, oftentimes more. And in the cases of discount and promotional fares, taxes and government fees can be up to 90% of the cost of the ticket. Airlines also complain about the high airport usage fees, the first round of which came online in 2015. Then it says, unlike the general trend upwards in the rest of Latin America, all of Ecuador's larger airports report declines in air travel for 3 years running. The Quito and Guayaquil airports say their international travel is down 30%, while domestic flights are showing even bigger declines, all struggling to balance their books as passenger numbers continue to decline.
Then it says to add insult to injury, the Ecuadorian government added higher sales taxes on international tickets. A $50 tourist fee was added in 2016, along with higher landing fees of an additional $50 in Quito and Guayaquil. The government tax rates on domestic flights were increased at the same time by 60%. Now, get this. An airline spokesman says, often airlines will provide low, heavily discounted promotional fees to help attract new customers. These are loss leaders. As a real example, he says, one airline recently offered an introductory fare of $15 for a Quito to Bogota, Colombia flight. People thought it was fantastic and unheard of at the time. However, it says, once the fees and airport taxes were added, the cost of the ticket zoomed to $182 for the consumer. So, there's something terribly unfair about the fact that the airline, who provides the service, gets $15 of that fare, and the government gets $167 of that fee. What a mind boggler. Yep, it's me, Johnny, again. In the last couple of weeks, I've been getting emails from people since I've been talking about Ecuador saying, yes, but once you become a resident in Ecuador, especially if you're on a pension or a senior citizen and get Social Security, you get certain other discounts that are supposed to balance things out, kind of, which is part of the incentive to move to Ecuador to get in on that pensionado residency. You know, a lot of Latin countries have what they call a rentista or pensionado residency program. If you're a certain age and are getting retirement income, you get the residency along with certain benefits like bringing a container in duty-free, buying a car every 5 years without paying IVA, discounts on transportation, certain restaurants, doctors, pharmacies, the cinema and stuff. Well, it all sounds good. If you're really budget-minded and maybe even a coupon clipper, you can get a lot of little discounts along the way. But most gringos and expats, unless they're former teachers, by the way, aren't that picky and they don't go for a 5 or 10% discount if it amounts to going out of their way and jumping through some hoops. They'll pay the normal fee, which is cheap by any means, and screw it. For example, one lady, gringa senior citizen living in Ecuador, who's on a pensionado residency, she says, the discounts you get from the pensionado program in Ecuador are very minor, especially when you're buying a full price ticket for airfare. The discount doesn't amount to much. She says, you know, Johnny, for some people, coupon clipping is a lifestyle. The U.S. even has reality cable TV shows based on hoarders, savers, and coupon clippers. She says, Johnny, we all want to save money, but in my experience, pinching pennies, nickel slot machines, bingo parlors, and a tight wad lifestyle might be fine for one crowd. I find it a bit tedious to hang with people like that. She said, there used to be a couple I went to coffee with every morning, and the topic of conversation would always get around to the $2.46 they saved on Senior Tuesday night at the bowling alley. Nah, that's not my idea of retirement, nor fading gently into the sunset. Keep it up, Johnny. Bye. Listen every week. Chantel. Okay, it's me, Johnny. Thanks for that, Chantel. And I'm with you on that one. By the way, did you know that Latin America is now Airbnb's fastest growing market? Latin America has over 250,000 properties listed, including Cuba. And as mentioned in a past show, Latin governments are cracking down, especially Latin countries where tourism is on the decline. Wait, that's wrong. I don't mean tourism itself is on the decline, but tourist spending per capita is on the decline. In other words, people want to get off a little bit cheaper and don't want to pay the regular rack rate hotel prices you get on the internet. So countries like Panama, Mexico, Costa Rica, and now Ecuador are doing what governments always do. They're looking to gouge the latest new entrants into the market. And if they don't play along, they'll fine them or shut them down. All right, pretty much in the same groove, I just got this email from Dave. He says, Johnny, I've been listening to the show for 5 years or more now, and I've heard every single episode. I went from an expat wannabe to an expat gonna-be, and now, as of May 19th, I'll finally be a full-blown expat. There's one subject, though, I don't think you've ever touched on, and that's tipping in Latin America, of course. What's the custom when it comes to tipping? Is there a custom? Tomorrow, I'll have to pay a private driver from the airport, and we'll be dining in various places, but do I tip for services like that up in the States? Is it built into the price? What do I do? I don't really want to come off as such a newbie that the locals will take advantage of me. Thanks again. I can't believe I finally made it down. Thanks, Dave.
Tipping, huh? How complicated could that be? Well, it's not quite that simple. I think the best way to start this out is by giving you the opinion of the many restaurant and hotel owners I know. They're pretty unanimous in their opinions about tipping. First of all, they say German and Russian tourists are the worst tippers. However, Russian mafia guys, they'll tip like it's no tomorrow, because sometimes they're right, there is no tomorrow. Now, they claim French tourists are just as tight as backpackers. Expat Eddie says backpackers are as nice as can be, and the French aren't, but they smell better. Next in line for cheapness is your average American school teacher. Oh, they'll tip all right, but somehow, Eddie says, they never get separate checks, and when the bill comes, there's a huge meeting of the minds and all the calculators come out. And they'll figure everyone's last coffee and dessert down to the last penny. And when it comes to the tip, everyone's up, shuffling around, and on their way out the door. And you know, there's always a teacher or two who just won't ante up a tip on principle. That principle being they're just cheap-ass mother. And there's always one or two in the group that disappear into the bathroom or the parking lot when it's time to ante up for the tip. And you'll find the ones that do tip and tip generously had in a past life a job as a waiter or a waitress. All right, tipping. How much? How often? This is how it works in most Latin countries. When you're way out in the boonies, in small towns of 1,000 to, let's say, 20,000 people, there'll be all kinds of little restaurants and tiendas and bed and breakfasts owned by the locals. And many of them, off the gringo tourist trail, will be off the books, too. Most often, the tip will not be included, so you tip appropriately, 10 or 15%. But remember, if the food sucks, or there's a hair in the drink or something, it's not the waiter or waitress's fault. They did not cook the meal. They just presented it to you. Unfortunately, though, you'll find that in Latin America anyway, almost all places share tips between the cooks and the waiters, etc. So if you have a real great waitress and your tip are heavy and the food sucked, she's sharing the tips, so you're giving positive reinforcement to a bad cook. Now, expat Eddie, who owns a lot of restaurants, or did anyway, till he started selling them off just lately, he says to solve that problem is easy. You get a really good waitress or one you really like. You shove the dough in her hand. You say, this is for you, not to be shared with anyone else. Of course, you'll have to know a little Spanish to pull that one off when you're off the gringo tourist trail, but do give it a shot. Now, of course, in the bigger cities and when you're on the gringo tourist trail, you'll be getting a receipt or a bill or a check. They call it factura, by the way. Now, on the gringo tourist trail, the restaurants are more organized and liable to be on the books, so they're paying taxes. That's why on the gringo tourist trail and at larger restaurants elsewhere, you'll almost always see the tips included on the bill. It's called propina, by the way. So when you look on your bill and it says propina, P-R-O-P-I-N-A, that means the tip's included. It's generally 10 to 15% added to the bill. By the way, you'll see that word propina down the bill a ways right above the grand total. So how frequently is the tip included? I'd say about 80% of the time. I'm a little irritated by that. Because, you know, if you look up the word tip in the dictionary, nothing is said about it being mandatory, but when it's automatically added to your bill, it is mandatory. Or is it? Well, there have been a few times, and just a few, where the waiter or waitress has been kind of a jerk. Highly unusual, but possible, especially on the gringo tourist trail, where gringos can be jerks too. So anyway, there have been a few times when I've tested that mandatory tip system. Believe me, when you say you're not going to pay the tip, you get the deer in the headlights look. They don't see that every day, and it causes a big backroom ruckus too. Now, the average Latin, he could have a fly in his soup or a pube in his punch, and he's still going to tip, because Latins are very forgiving and non-confrontational. In fact, in all my years down here, I've never seen a Latin refuse to pay the tip. Though I've done it, and it really makes the Latin people you're with uptight. Makes them squirm. You ought to try it sometime. No, not for kicks, but only if you get bad service. Now, I gotta say, most Latin waiters and waitresses will bend over backwards to please. And gringos, especially gringas, can be less forgiving and will push them to the limit sometimes. You longtime listeners might remember I mentioned my own mother and sisters are hard cases at restaurants. They'll always send something back to the kitchen, guaranteed. Too hot, cold, underdone, overdone, too spicy, too bland, too salty, too sweet, too sour, too heavy, too light, too rich, too good to be true. Yes, I've heard it all. Whereas us guys, we just go with the flow and eat what's on the plate. Not to say I haven't sent a few things back when they've been underdone, but man, I'll tell you, an expat Eddie will bear this out 100%. He'll admit it's those gringa tourists, not the gringos, who show no mercy to the poor waitress when the dish isn't exactly as they expected it. Not all gringas, of course, but Eddie says he's never seen a gringo do that. Only gringas. Now, knowing the extremely picky females in my own family, I always thought, if I was a cook or a chef put in a spot like that, a little stealthy sabotage could go a long way. I mean, you know, when that plate gets sent back two or three times, he does have the power of payback, you know, to do something evil. You get the idea. In fact, many years ago when I was in high school, back in Chicago, I had a friend who was a night manager at a fast food restaurant, and he told me of some of the evil games the cooks would play on overly demanding clients and sloppy drunks. Now, don't get the idea that Latin cooks are evil-minded or not. That kind of sabotage would be much more prevalent up in the first world, where people tend to dislike or even hate when they have jobs like that. Whereas down here in Latin America, people are proud and happy to have a job, no matter how lowly we might think it is. At least it seems that way, based on the fun and the smiles you see, even with the garbage men and ditch-digging crowd. Now, one more very important thing about tipping, and I didn't believe this when I first came down, and it took me a couple of years for it to sink in. People would say, Johnny, don't tip too much. Don't over-tip. You'll upset the balance of things. Say what? Upset the balance of things? Other expat gringos I had met would say, even if the people look like they're poor and they're living way below your standards, don't give them $5 or $10 just to haul one bag from the airport gate to the taxi. But you know, all us clueless gringos are guilty of that. We see someone with ragged shoes and ragged clothes, and they help you out a little bit, pump your gas, give you directions, wipe your windshield with a big old sincere smile, the kind you know is real, and you never really see that much up in the States anymore. Suddenly, you're fishing in your pocket, and out comes $5. Those are feel-good situations, and you'll get a big smile for that, but those are exactly the kind of things that ruined Costa Rica and, well, Panama, Acapulco, Cancun, and so many places where gringos have piled in. We throw money around like that because $5 to us is maybe 5, 10, 15, or 20 minutes worth of work for the average guy up in the States. Whereas here in Latin America, $5 could mean a half a day's work for the average guy. That's why so many Latins living out in the boonies start relocating to where the gringos are settling. They know gringos on vacation tip like drunken sailors, and they know their fellow Latins, even when on vacation, don't tip much. Oh, they tip, you know, $10 meal, 10%, $1. And your average gringo on vacation, he'd be embarrassed to give a dollar tip to anyone. You know the drill. Up in the States, if you get bad service, you leave a handful of change. That's the insult. Down here, a handful of U.S. money change is a nice tip. So in the end, who's to blame for destroying Costa Rica as a nice, pleasant, inexpensive Plan B destination? We did it. We jaded that population. We overtipped everyone. They watch us as we buy vastly overpriced, useless, cheap tourist junk. Most of it made in China. So that's why I definitely prefer to live off the Gringo Tourist Trail, or at least not too close to the Gringo Tourist Trail. Because when you're one gringo in 100 or 1,000 or 10,000, you're a valued guest and an oddity that everyone appreciates and wants to be friends with. But when gringos pile in and create their little Gringolandias, when the whole economy starts depending on the gringo dollar, well, that's when a country turns into a place like Costa Rica. And you know, I don't want to be part of that. And you shouldn't either. Now, I'm not saying that if your Spanish really sucks, you shouldn't hang around some of those gringo-infested areas, at least when you first get down, so you can make some contacts and some friends, get some advice, get your sea legs, so to speak. But my advice, once you get settled and feel pretty good in your new country, start exploring, get away from the gringoized centers. You'll be a lot happier. You'll blend in better. You'll find yourself among some great, unpretentious Latin people. And your cost of living, well, you just won't believe it. So in the end, one of the fastest ways to drive up the cost of living and create a society that's jaded and dependent on gringos and the gringo dollar, just start tipping everyone exactly like you do up in the States. Now, this might rub you wrong or seem a bit harsh too, but you should pay your maids and nannies and cooks and gardeners the prevailing rate. Sure, it's too low by our standards, way too low. So reward them in other ways. Give them things. Buy their kids bikes or send them to a better school. Give them your old TV and computer. They better work, though. But don't mess with the wage structure. In fact, I know one gringo, real nice guy, he pays his cleaning lady double what everyone else gets. And now he's got a prima donna cleaning lady on his hands. She's the envy of all the maids and cleaning ladies in the subdivision. It kind of upset the apple cart in a lot of ways. The other cleaning ladies are jealous, and she's made a few enemies now, too. I could give you some examples, but that's a show for another time. All right, changing gears a second. You know, the other day I was talking to a 20-something Latin guy who'd gone to university up in the States. He was a middle-class kid. That means his parents made $400 or $500 a month, and you'd call that the working poor up in the States. So how'd this kid get that lucky break? Well, every first world university offers full scholarships to deserving Latin kids. And you do run into them on occasion. And this guy was not one of those two percenters, the entitled kids of the rich that can be pretty repulsive without even realizing it. You know, racist, classist, sexist, just like their parents. Not all of them, of course, but a good percentage of them. And you do meet some regular, intelligent, nice guy college grads whose parents could never afford to send them to college, yet they went to university in the States, and now they're back down in their home country, either working or looking for a job. By the way, in almost all cases, when a kid gets a scholarship to school up in the States, they don't get permanent residency. They're on a student visa and have to come back to their home country when they're finished. Although it's true, almost every one of them would rather be working up in the States because, you know, they can make 5 times as much money doing the same kind of work. That is, if they can get a job in their field. Because they, like the vast majority of regular U.S. college students, they get useless degrees. That is, useless in today's economy. Anyway, the other day I was talking to a Latin guy who graduated from a U.S. college, discussing what always comes up, Trump, the wall, the first world, and the so-called American dream. Oh yeah, and my jammy. And this guy said something quite interesting. He said, you know, the difference between the Latin Americans that swarm into the States and the European immigrants that came in during the last century, he said the European immigrants came chasing an American dream not for themselves but for their children, where the byword back then was self-sacrifice. They'd suffer, do whatever crap job that was available so that their kids could get an education. And you know, this Latin kid, I shouldn't call him a kid, he's like 26 years old, he said, in truth, the Latins up in the United States are an embarrassment to him and so many people like him. Because, he said, they're not swarming in to get that American dream for their children. They're doing it for themselves. They've got a selfish American dream versus that noble so-called American dream or cause that was a big part, if not the major part, of the European influx of the past century. He said, I saw it with the common Latin people on the streets up there. The Latins that come to the States, they'll abandon their own kids for years, even decades at a time, leaving back home in Salvador, Costa Rica, whatever. He said there's something wrong with those kinds of values, and it's a bad example to set for the kids. And when he said that, man, I was shocked. This guy had a brain. And when I complimented him on that analysis and said, how'd you get so smart? He said he was a history and sociology major. All right, so he wasn't so smart after all. He said he'd been out of school a year and a half already and couldn't get a job in his field here in Latin America. He was working, though, making about $700 a month as a call center trainer because his English was very good. Man, that said it all. Now, this guy had 2 big advantages. His English was very good, and he'd graduated from a U.S. university, though he had 2 crap degrees. Then what he said next, in my opinion, drove the final nail into the coffin for this guy. He said, with great pride, he's getting his master's. He's taking an MBA course on the weekends. So what do you say to a guy like that? Well, guy, unless you marry a rich girl, win the lottery, or get very lucky, you're sort of screwed. I know you're thinking, Johnny, how could you be so pessimistic? Well, how about this article from El Nuevo Diario, Nicaragua? Janice Perez, manager of Serper, a large human resources company in Nicaragua with almost 20 years in the country, says there's a negative balance between supply and demand of people with master's degrees, like MBAs. He says without extensive work experience, an MBA itself can be meaningless. He goes on to say, companies that demand professionals with master's degrees always look at work experience first, whereas students think it's enough to just have that diploma, the piece of paper. The article says, one of the hidden educational problems in Latin America, a problem that educational professionals just don't want to address, is the excessive number of people with graduate and undergraduate degrees with no professional work experience. Worse yet, most universities advertise their MBA and master's programs as the key to the future. Man, doesn't that sound familiar? You can't get a job in your chosen career, so you go heading for a master's, and then you get out and you're working at Costco, Walmart, or Starbucks, and not in the office either. Yes, and it's true. Every Latin newspaper I pick up has ads for master's degree programs. And in big Latin cities, you see those ads on billboards as you're driving around, too. Oh, and get this. Throughout Latin America, there's a huge brick-and-mortar university construction boom. Talk about a doomed prognosis. Yet another reason why so many young Latin professionals end up living with mommy, daddy, and grandma. But man, those diplomas look nice on the wall. And the family's busting their buttons with pride, too. If only Julio, the educated one, would clean his room and make his bed once in a while. All right, let me see if I can get my information out to you in 1 minute flat. Remember, I've got some spots open for my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on the seminar link. And if you sign up by June 1st, you get in on the early bird discount. And while you're at the newexpat.com website, you'll find out how to kill two birds with one stone. That is, apply for your Guatemalan temporary or permanent residency at the very same time, saving you the extra expense of time off and another trip in the near future. You'll also find out about those fabulous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. And if you just can't swing getting boots on the ground right now, be sure to take my Expat Essentials course. That's www.expatplanb.com. And don't forget to put the www in there. And finally, if you want me to help you out personally with your own Plan B, we can do a phone or Skype consult and work out your particular details. Again, go to www.thenewexpat.com to check out my phone consult questionnaire. Have a look. It'll stimulate your neurons.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.